We are going to have 3 weeks of stewardship emphasis services. Today's the beginning. We're going to take next Sunday off. It's All Saints Sunday. There's going to be communion, dedication of memorials, and we're going to lift up the names of those who have died in the past year. We'll post those that we know about through the church, but then there will be an opportunity to mention others. And but it's not, and then the 8th and 15th, we're going to go back to the stewardship thing, but it's not going to be just finances, because stewardship is about a lot more than that. And I'm going to try to maybe take some of the blinders off of our concept of stewardship today. And besides, the Abingdon Guide to Funding Ministry, the editors state this, and I think it's even in the foreword, so it's not even into the meat of the book yet, but they say developing Christian givers is a process rather than a program. It takes practice, and that it is a journey rather than a destination. So we're not going to do it in 3 weeks, no matter how much time and effort we spend on it. But that's a piece of it, but not the whole thing. But the theme statement I would like to mention for the three Sundays of stewardship emphasis is New Church for New Generations. That might concern and terrify some of you, because you know what we have and what you've had, some of you, your whole life in this church. And that might be a terrifying statement, and I'll put some items pertaining to that. Well, it's on the bottom of the other page of your program today, actually, on the after the benediction piece there. There's some things about change and why it's difficult for the church. But also, it's just that we like what we are familiar with. And so the concept, the idea of a new church for new generations might feel like toes being stepped on or that sort of thing. But even though deep down we all know that we're not riding horses to church, and the buggy is out in the museum. But still, we like to hold on to what we're familiar with. But new church for new generations, where'd that come from? And it came out of my brain. That's kind of funny and terrifying, isn't it? But here's, and I'm just going to scratch the surface on that. Here's where it comes from. Number one, we've been involved in that Healthy Church Initiative. And that's one of the places where I get this concept, new church for new generations. Because a healthy church is moving, it's dynamic, it isn't static. And so even to say we will be involved in the Healthy Church Initiative with the understanding that it might cause us or call us to change is a willingness to face the fact that we might need to in some areas. No, we didn't have anything dramatic or huge, but there's some things that we can do differently to be more involved and do a better job of making disciples for Jesus Christ, not only here, but throughout the world. And so the consultation report also encouraged us to have a stronger outreach into the world. You've always been a missions church. You have a strong history of that. But the Healthy Church Initiative calls us to also, and reminds us to also have a strong emphasis on the Great Commission from Matthew 28. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. Last Sunday we had church conference here. It's really fascinating to have somebody read Matthew 28, 19 and 20, who is a native of South Korea coming to the United States to make disciples of Jesus Christ. It was pretty cool. Pretty dramatic. Anyway, Reverend Hee-chan Jian from the Mount Vernon United Methodist Church. And in fact, he left, you can include him in your prayers, he left to visit his homeland of South Korea and celebrate his father's 80th birthday. Ron, I told him, if he had just mentioned, I said, we could have just sent you downstairs for cake and you could have saved yourself the trip. But no, he went to South Korea. Anyway, so that's one place. The Healthy Church Initiative is where this idea, new church for new generations, comes from. The next one was when I was dealing with the trustees a while back, and we were getting a meeting time and that sort of thing. Now, keep in mind that a few years ago, we had one trustee, Ralph. Ralph, you remember Ralph. And Ralph did the best he could, and then we decided we ought to have more than one. And they ought to be active, and they ought to have their own treasure and all this sort of thing. And we had some wonderful people step up, and we've been very fortunate that way. But we could have probably met during the day if we'd have really wanted to, because most of the trustees were retired. Well, now when we have a trustee meeting, we have to, we had meet and greet at the elementary school, and that took three of them. And then we have to be concerned about the recreation schedule, depending on what season it is and if they're available. And if the spouse is involved with a work meeting at work, then to stay home with the kids. I mean, it is amazing. And it just occurred to me a while ago that we didn't used to have to worry about things like that. And it's fun. I like it. New church for new generations. And so we see some ownership and responsibility being transferred slowly, but it's being transferred, and there's some difficulty of letting go, but also there's some difficulty of assuming as well, but it's happening. It isn't something that your pastor's bright enough to do on the front end, but somehow or another, God gave me a little bit of vision to look in the rearview mirror and say, you know what, we're different. I'm not sure when it happened, how it happened, but it's happening. And then the third thing, these gigs, and for visitors, I'll just say gigs are our small group ministry, growth and impact groups, personal impact, church impact, community impact, world impact in some way. And so we're up to seven, but not everybody's in a gig. And so we have room to grow. And there, all of the gigs can have more people, and so talk to us. But the average membership tenure of the seven current gig leaders, the average membership tenure of the seven gig leaders, 4.5 years. 4.5 years. Is Barb here? Barb, you really bumped it up. You've been here 13. But 4.5 years. Now, what we're saying with that is, and it's appropriate, and the people who are smart enough to write those church growth books, they know that your new ministries are going to come from your new people. Now, that doesn't make it easy for those of us who have the original dirt under our toenails yet to accept that, but it's happening. And we just need to praise God for it. We just need to praise God for that somehow there has been space allowed for that to happen. So anyway, new church for new generations. I'm not sure how it feels to you, but it feels like vitality to me. And it feels like the Spirit might be doing something. And it feels like in our urge, our desire to be discerning of what God calls us to do, somewhere, somehow, we are being faithful. And I'm excited about that. So anyway, but I love the story of Bartimaeus. So let's go there, if that's all right. Is it okay? Because here we have Bartimaeus, and then the story of classic Christianity. In the book Classic Christianity, there's this line: there are few things quite so boring as being religious, but there is nothing quite as exciting as being Christian. Just ask Bartimaeus. I mean, here he is. He is outside of life. He is outside the mainstream. He sits by the gate, which is where all the beggars sat. He sits by the gate and begs so that he can eat. Now, I have been told, and I understand that when people lose one of their five senses, that it tends to have another or so sense pick up some of the slack, You know, like, have you ever heard that somebody who is blind might be able to tell the difference between the wind blowing through an oak tree and a maple tree? I read that not so long ago. And if you think about that kind of sensitivity, it's amazing. But anyway, so here's Bartimaeus. Now, Jesus makes this comment. It's interesting because Bartimaeus is by the side of the road. Jesus is surrounded by people who are on the entourage. Now, if you'll pardon me for saying it this way, but the people are kind of like following Jesus because he's leading in the polls that day. And so they're religious. And so, of course, they're all excited about their candidate here. And so Bartimaeus says, "Hey, wait a minute, I'm here, I'm a blind beggar." And they say, "Shut up." And they keep walking. But he yells out even louder, and Jesus says, "Let's stop the parade. I want to talk to him." Now, I think they were pretty much manipulated visits, but when the Pope was here, you know, he stopped and visited with a variety of people. Sometimes we knew about it at the time, and sometimes we didn't, as it turns out. But Bartimaeus knows that being religious is one thing, but there's nothing quite as exciting as being Christian, as really knowing Jesus. And so, bring him over here. Now, Jesus has this crowd of followers, and Jesus has told them, "We're going to Jerusalem." Now, they weren't fools. Just like in our day, they know that if you want to make some changes, if you want to affect some things in the world, you have to go to the seat of power. And that was Jerusalem. But that's all they heard is, "We're going to Jerusalem." But that wasn't all that Jesus said. And now, this is what the whole statement is. He said, "We're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death, and then they will hand him over to the Gentiles, and they will mock him and spit upon him, flog him and kill him, and after 3 days he'll rise again." But they didn't hear that, so they're just going, "Yeah, let's go to Jerusalem." They're all excited about the possibilities. But you see, and you see, we don't know where Jesus said all this, "We're going to Jerusalem," because in the earlier, in that chapter 10, it just says, "And as he set out on a journey," so we don't know where it was, but I'm thinking that maybe Bartimaeus' sense of hearing was so acute that even though it was miles away, kind of like the eagle way up thousands of feet in the air can see mice, but Bartimaeus must have heard Jesus because he knew that this guy was special. And so he cried out. So, somehow or another, Bartimaeus said, "I refuse." He said, "I refuse. I refuse to sit here by the side of the road if the Christ is going to walk right by me. I refuse to just hang out here." Or as it says in the song, "Sometimes I just want to close my eyes and act like everything's all right when I know they're not. This world needs God, but it's easier to stand and watch. I could say a prayer and just move on like nothing's wrong, but I refuse." And then, "To stand and watch the weary and lost cry out for help. I refuse to turn my back and try to act like all is well. I refuse to stay unchanged, to wait another day, to doubt to myself. But I refuse to make one more excuse. I refuse." And this is the line. "Hey, lead us in this. We're going to sing it. Go ahead. I don't care, I don't want to say another empty prayer. Oh, I refuse to sit around someone else, to do what God has called me to do myself. Oh, I could choose not to move, but I refuse." He can do it from the balcony, too. Okay. So, To refuse is an act of stewardship. And to go along and pretend everything is right is an act of lousy stewardship. Stewardship is our whole life. There's no part of it where we cannot be generous, where we cannot effect change in someone else's life. Now, we're gonna do a video, okay? And it's just 2.5 minutes long, but we're going to do a video. And I want you, as you are looking at this video, think about whole life generosity. And I want you to find and identify the places in this video, the people, the situations, the events that are showing generosity. And then we'll talk about that later and we'll name them.
Morales of the Coronado High School Thunderbirds in El Paso, Texas, makes no qualms about it. He has a favorite on this team.
Mitchell, I need you to help me out with my coaching tips, Mitchell.
Team manager Mitchell Marcus has a developmental disability.
1, 2, 3, bang!
And he far surpasses everyone here when it comes to love of the game.
He's this amazing person that our basketball team loves being around.
Yay!
Mitchell's mom, Amy, says he's always been that way.
Mitchell always had a basketball. That was always what he wanted for his birthday.
And because basketball is that important to him, on the last game of the regular season, the coach told Mitchell to suit up.
What was it like to put on the uniform?
I was very happy.
I bet you were.
Just wearing a jersey was enough for Mitchell. But what he didn't know, what no one knew at the time, was that the coach planned to play him at the end, no matter what the score.
You were prepared to lose that game?
For his moment, yes. For his moment in time, yes.
And so, with 1.5 minutes left, Coronado leading, but only by 10, Coach Morales put in his manager.
And just started hearing Mitchell, Mitchell,
Mitchell, Mitchell.
But here's where the fairy tale fell apart. Although his teammates did everything they could to get Mitchell a basket, each time they passed him the ball, he either missed the shot, or, like on their last possession, booted it out of bounds, turning the ball over to the other team with just seconds left.
He wasn't going to be able to score, but I was hoping that he was happy that he was just put in the game.
Could you have ever imagined what happened next?
No, I did. I could not. Not at all.
What happened next happened on the inbound. The guy with the ball there is a senior at Franklin High School, number 22, Jonathan Montañez.
I was raised to treat others how you want to be treated. Just thought Mitchell deserved his chance, deserved his opportunity.
I think I'll cry about it for the rest of my life.
What Jonathan did was yell out Mitchell's name, then threw the ball right to him, right there. One of the most memorable turnovers of all time. It wasn't the game-winning shot. When the buzzer sounded, Coronado had 15 more points than Franklin. But Jonathan's assist and Mitchell's basket did change the outcome decidedly. Play any game with this much sportsmanship. Both teams win. Steve Hartman, On the Road, in El Paso, Texas.
Kind of cool, huh? Where's generosity in there? Where do you see generosity in that story, in that clip? What?
The coach.
In the coach. I'm going to play him, win or lose. I am going to put him in the game. Generosity. Just being generous. Teammates, feeding them ball, and they had that relationship. They knew this was potentially Mitchell's moment. How generous. How generous. Somebody else could score points, you know. Yeah. What if? Good. Where else? Mary? The other team, number 22, I don't remember his name now. Yeah, so generous. Thinking, because generosity thinks about the other person. It isn't just about me, ours, us. Win or lose, the ability to go beyond is generosity, so that it isn't about me. Where else do you see generosity? Anywhere else? The fans. Oh, isn't that funny? Mitchell. And when they come spilling out on the court, there's a lot of people wiping their eyes. But anyway, so generous, even with that, because by that time, it's not about winning and losing. It's just that generosity and being aware of someone else's need, living generous. Anywhere else, I don't want to leave anything out. Generosity is whole life. It isn't just about money. We identify with generous people. I can think of generous people that have taught me so much that I'm still struggling to learn. And I just marvel, but they've affected my life, and you affect people's lives in so many ways by the various acts of generosity. And so I want you to think, now, and like I say, we're going to kind of give it a break next week, but then the 8th and the 15th, there is some stuff that you might want to ponder in the newsletter too, but think about generosity. What does generosity in life look like? What impact have generous people made in your life? And I think we should all be able to think of a few of those in our lives, people who have laid their own things aside for a spell to pick up and to help someone else. This one of my favorite authors is Sister Joyce Rupp from Des Moines, a Servite sister. And a devotional book that I'm using right now is Fragments of Your Ancient Name. And this is one of the poems from Fragments of Your Ancient Name. She picks up different images, names of God. And this one is, My Most Treasured Happiness. God as my most treasured happiness. A lot of changes are required within me before I count you as my most treasured happiness. Unclasping my grip on what is unnecessary. Releasing my aimless desire for the impossible. Ceasing to clutch at things feeding my ego. Forgiving long-held, musty grudges. Turning from cultural notions of what satisfies. All this and much more has to go on its way. Only then will I realize who I have in you, the source of what brings me true satisfaction. And as we come to that source of true satisfaction, I think we find the roots of generosity. When the choir kids start singing, I'm going to blow my nose because that thing makes me cry every time. But I would like you to consider, though, that about a week ago in the Cedar Rapids Gazette, they had an article in there with a big headline that said, Americans expected to spend, and I think it was $6.9 billion on Halloween. It was some crazy amount of money. Now think about that, over $6 billion on Halloween, celebrating death, basically. Celebrating ugliness. And I think when we have the key to life, Bartimaeus would tell us that we better celebrate our resources, that we have something better than Halloween to celebrate and offer to the world, much better than candy, for that matter. And but you know what? I'm going to just mention this because it's stewardship and we kind of expect me to mention money. And I'll just mention this, that we have people in the church who will spend more money on candy for Halloween than they give to the church in a year. Isn't that interesting? And so when we talk about making disciples, we need to keep working to be a new church for new generations.